Chapter 12. Nor Bid the Stars Farewell. A knock at the door woke Bella the next morning, well past the time she would usually have risen. "Who was that?" she murmured sleepily to Feely, when he let himself into her room a few moments later. "A messenger from Thorin," he said, looking at her curiously. "He requested a meeting with us this afternoon. I accepted, but if you'd rather we didn't..." "No!" she protested, unable to keep the smile off her face. "I mean, yes, we ought to go. I don't mind." Feely narrowed his eyes at her. "You're cheerful this morning," he said, though it was more a question than an observation. "Am I?" she said brightly. "Perhaps it's because it's such a lovely day." Feely looked pointedly at the windowless stone walls, then back at Bella. "All right, what's going on?" he said. "Tell me." "Feely," Bella protested, lowering her eyes and looking, rather obviously, she realized in retrospect, toward the hidden passage to Thorin's room. "There's nothing to tell." "But when did you..." "Oh no! You found it, didn't you?" Feely said, covering his face with his hands. "The door!" "You knew?" she gasped, shocked. "Of course I knew," Feely said. "That's why I picked these rooms, so that when you married Thorin, we could turn this bedroom into your study or sitting room, and it would be connected with ours." "That's a wonderful idea," Bella said. "And a bit sneaky of you." He sighed. "Yes, it seemed clever enough then. We'd better not tell Keely you've been wandering. This time I might not be able to stop him from locking you in." "I won't do it again, I promise," Bella said, feeling a bit guilty. "I didn't know what was on the other side when I opened the door." "No, I suppose you couldn't have," Feely said, glaring at the hidden door through the curtain that covered it. "You sorted yourselves out, I hope." "Yes," Bella blushed. "Or, rather, I think so. I suppose we'll find out this afternoon."
"If you have, Dwalin's going to be insufferable," Feely said, smiling at last. "He bet Nori it would take another week."
After lunch, Feely took Bella to one of the small chambers near the throne room, set aside for meetings between the king and his advisors. "It's not too late to change your mind," he said quietly as he knocked on the stone door. "We could switch rooms if you wanted." A shake of her head was all the response she could give before the door opened, and Thorin ushered them into the otherwise empty room.
"Sit, please,"
he said, gesturing towards a round stone table, ringed with seats that were just a hair too high for Bella to manage comfortably.
"Feely,"
Thorin began once they were all seated,
"your sister has indicated that she would be willing to accept the continuation of my courtship."
"That is lucky for you," Feely said coolly, ignoring Bella's elbow against his side. But it seemed Thorin took no offense, because he only nodded.
"I agree. I have sworn to her that I will make amends for my actions at the gate, and I intend to uphold that promise."
He turned to Bella.
"In light of that, I have a request. I would like to know the courting traditions of your people, so that I may honor them, and you, by seeing them done."
"Oh," Bella said, blushing. "That's a lovely thought, really, but not at all necessary." "Flowers," Feely interrupted. "Hobbits begin courting with a gift of flowers to their intended. There's some kind of code to it."
"I'll have someone look into it,"
Thorin said, making a note on one of the many pages strewn on the table before him. "It's not a code," Bella frowned, "and there's no need for this. I'm happy to follow your ways, though I confess I'm not sure what else must be done, now that we've exchanged presents."
"Dwarves have long engagements,"
Thorin said,
"to accommodate the crafting of the marriage gifts."
"More gifts?" Bella sighed. "I don't know where I'll find another Arkenstone." Feely laughed. "Not to worry. Marriage gifts are made by the giver, and not exchanged until the night before the wedding." "Well, I hope you're not expecting anything from the forge," Bella said. "I'm no smith."
"There are no requirements,"
Thorin said,
"except that it come from your own hands."
"I'll manage," Bella said. "Now, what else, besides gifts?" "That's all," Feely said,
confused. Once courtship gifts are exchanged and accepted, you begin planning the wedding.
That's all?
Bella echoed, mouth open in shock.
That cannot be all.
Thorne and Feely looked at each other.
Why not?
Because, Bella spluttered, because that would mean we're engaged, and I cannot be engaged without knowing about it.
But you've accepted one another, Feely said.
What more is there to do?
Don't you have family meetings?
Bella asked.
We've not even had any sort of discussion about where we will live, and who provides what. There's been no announcement.
Dwarves love fiercely,
Thorne said, looking at her intently.
And only once. When two dwarves have settled on one another, no disagreement or family quarrel will put them asunder. Our courtships are simple affairs.
Oh, Bella said, looking down at the table. I see. Thorne hesitated.
I can see this is not your way,
he said slowly, as if each word were being pulled from him.
You need not consider yourself bound.
No! Bella interrupted, looking up quickly. That is not what I meant at all. It isn't the engagement that bothers me, only that I did not know.
Tell us, Feely prompted, how it would be done, back in your shire.
Bella thought for a moment. We're a bit beyond the start of it now, but in the shire, Thorne would have indicated he wished to court me with flowers, as you said. If I wanted to encourage him, I would cook him a meal, or send him a gift of food. Then our families and friends would consider us courting, but not yet engaged. We would spend time together, supervised, of course, and if that went well, he would request a meeting with the men of my family, where I would not be present.
What is the purpose of this meeting, and how much of your family would be there?
Asked Thorne, making notes.
Oh, everyone would go, Bella said carelessly.
The idea is for the family to get to know him, to see if he'd fit in well with them, and if the match were suitable. But everyone in the Shire knows everyone else, or nearly, so usually it's just a chance to give the suitor a hard time. I would have a similar meeting with the women of his family, on a different night, for the same reasons.
And if it were to go well?
Thorne prompted. She blushed. If it went well, our families would give permission for an engagement, which would be announced at some kind of gathering, usually a party.
Well, said Feely, that doesn't seem so complicated. But what's the purpose of the engagement, if you don't prepare gifts? Why not just marry?
Oh, no. Bella shook her head. There's still so much more to be done. Once we were engaged, there would have to be a meeting between the heads of our families, where we'd hammer out the details of the marriage.
What details?
Asked Thorne. Bella shrugged. I'm not sure. I've never been to one. But I know that before the old Took would agree to the match, he made my father promise to build my mother a new and comfortable hobbit hole. Bella smiled. She was his favorite daughter. Thorne smirked.
I shuddered to think what Feely might demand of me.
I warned you not to taunt me, uncle, Feely said, with a gleam in his eye. Already I can think of a few ideas.
Bella sighed. I wouldn't grow overconfident if I were you, she warned Feely. He can pick any relative he likes to negotiate on his behalf.
Must I? Thorne asked. Surely I am the head of my family, and if you think I am afraid to face my nephew over the bargaining table—
Oh, no!
Bella protested, wringing her hands. You can't speak for yourself. It's not done. Thorne shrugged.
As you say, whatever your customs dictate, I will obey. It is little enough, by way of penance.
Thorne, she said, I haven't asked for any of this, and I don't need it, truly.
It's not that much to ask, Bell,
Feely said, cutting off her protests. You are a hobbit among dwarves, and we have not done all we should to make you comfortable. He looked pointedly at her feet, which did not quite reach the ground.
Besides, I like the sound of that family meeting. He would not deny us that.
Fighting back a smile, Bella stood up. I suppose not. But if you'll excuse us, she said, looking at Thorne, I need to speak with Feely on the subject of marriage gifts.
Of course,
Thorne said, straightening his papers.
I have some matters to see to myself.
They made it as far as the door before Feely paused, and with a sigh, turned back, walking over to Thorin and leaning in to speak to him quietly. "Not daffodils," Bella heard him whisper. She grinned to him. "Oh, shush," he said, fighting back a smile. "He'll need all the help he can get." Months passed, and Bella and the dwarves were so occupied with the clearing out and rebuilding of Erebor that she had very little time to think of courting at all. She was nearly always busy, helping to clean and straighten the ruined dwellings, and making room for the dwarves who would be returning from the Blue Mountains. It was dirty, tedious work that caused Bella to rise early and stumble, exhausted, into bed each night, but she was glad to be able to contribute something to the mountain's reclaiming, and her efforts did not go unnoticed or unremarked upon by the dwarves from the Iron Hills. Over time, they began to grow quite fond of her, particularly as she always made the time to see that food and drink were brought to wherever the work was the most unpleasant. In fact, they made something of a mascot of her, often going out of their way to call her over to see some uncovered artifact, or a clever bit of carving that had been hidden beneath the rubble. As busy as she was, Thorin and the others were even busier, especially Feely. His position as Thorin's heir kept him running from one side of the mountain to the other, in order to report to Thorin on the progress of the restoration. Keely, who did not have the temperament for such dry tasks, threw himself into the rebuilding with enthusiasm. In keeping with his self-appointed role as her unofficial bodyguard, he usually ended up working wherever Bella happened to be on a given day, so he was with her when a messenger arrived from Thorin, bearing a wooden box no bigger than her palm. "It can't be a present," Keely asked, raising his eyebrows. "Not without going through Feely, or any of us." "It does seem odd," Bella agreed, wiping her hands on her apron and frowning at the more stubborn stains before picking up the box and sliding open the latch. When she saw what the box contained, she laughed, loud enough that Keely looked at her oddly. "Show me," he demanded, turning it back and forth in his hands when she'd given it over. "Oh," he said, once he'd gotten a good look. "Well, it's pretty enough, and he's overdue for giving you another gift, but he shouldn't have sent it to you directly. You ought to send it back." "No, Keely, look," she said, taking it out of his hand. "Your uncle has sent me flowers." And he had, in the form of a brooch no bigger than her smallest finger. It was green and silver, and set with sparkling white gems shaped to look like tiny blossoms. "Flowers? Really?" asked Keely, peering at the little gems with narrowed eyes. "Is this one of your hobbit secrets?"
"Hobbits don't have secrets," Bella replied, smiling foolishly at the brooch. "And they're lilies of the valley, I believe."
Keely rolled his eyes. "Of course you do. You have your flower code and your thread smithing.
It's called embroidery, and there's nothing secretive about it."
Bella sighed, because this was an old argument. "In fact, I'd be glad to teach you, but it takes a great deal of time and patience, and..."
"No, no, no,"
Keely interrupted, raising his hands in protest and scowling petulantly.
"Keep your secrets, but I'll remember this next time you ever hear some kudzel and get curious."
"They mean returning happiness," she exclaimed, louder than she meant to. "A lily of the valley signifies the return of what makes you happy," she repeated, more quietly.
"Oh," Keely smiled. "You could have just said. Still, that's very nice."
And he took the brooch and fastened it to her dress for her, above her heart. Bella wore it faithfully over the weeks and months that followed, and it eased her mind when days would go by without an opportunity to do more than greet Thorin as they passed each other in the hall. It wasn't until the last frost melted away into the first shoots of green grass at the base of the mountain that Bella began to worry Thorin might have changed his mind. But he spoke to her warmly when they found a moment, and she still felt his eyes on her over the breakfast table, where she sat securely between Feely and Keely most mornings. Then, one day in the middle of spring, it became clear what Thorin had been waiting for.
"Keely! Belle!"
Feely shouted, as he burst into their rooms in a Keely-like fashion.
"The caravans from the Blue Mountains have arrived!"
"Ma's here!"
Keely shouted, leaping up from his chair and running over to tug his boots on.
"Come on, Belle!"
Bella smiled at him. "You go ahead. I'll meet her later. She'll want some time alone with the two of you."
"Fine, fine,"
Feely said, leaning over to drop a kiss on her cheek.
"Supper tonight, then."
"Sounds lovely," Bella called, as Keely dragged Feely toward the door by his arm. He threw it open so fast he nearly barreled into Thorin, who was standing in the doorway, his hand poised to knock.
Keely,
Thorin said dryly, amused.
Feely, may I have a moment?
Of course, said Feely, though Keely nearly quivered with impatience at his side.
Months ago, I gave your sister the first part of my courting gift,
Thorin said, handing Feely a wrapped parcel.
This is the balance.
Well, you kept it long enough, complained Feely, undoing the wrapping. I thought you had... He stopped, staring at whatever the fabric had hidden. Then, with meticulous care, he folded it back up again. Laughing quietly to himself, he looked up at Thorin. I know when I'm beaten, he said, and he turned to Bella. Here, he said, pressing the bundle into her hand and squeezing her fingers around it. Open it once we're gone. What in the world? Bella said, as he left the room, pulling a now protesting Keely behind him. She turned to Thorin. That's not how it went before.
It's an unusual gift,
he said, the corner of his mouth quirking into a hesitant smile.
Open it.
Bella looked down at the little parcel with dread, terrible visions of giant emeralds or something equally preposterous running through her mind. Biting her lip, she threw back the fabric and saw what it was that had so startled Feely. It was her father's knife. What? Bella said, her eyes filling with tears as she looked at the little blade, clean and serviceable as ever, and none the worse for wear after its months beneath the Misty Mountains. How? Thorin shrugged, looking uncomfortable.
I sent a raven with my orders and a description of the tunnel exit,
he said.
I'm not without allies in Ered Luin, particularly now.
He paused, waiting for her reply, but when it did not come, he continued.
None of your other things were salvageable, I'm afraid. That golem creature must have scattered them down the passage, but the knife was well enough, with a little attention.
After a few more moments of silence, he spoke again.
I thought you would prefer this, if I was mistaken.
How long? She interrupted him, her voice thick and unsteady.
What do you mean?
He asked, thoroughly bewildered. When did you plan this? She said, still looking down at the knife in her hand. How long ago? He took a step forward, reaching out to close her fingers over it.
The moment you realized it was gone, you wept for it,
he said, his voice growing rougher.
And now you weep again.
With her free hand, she reached up to touch her cheeks and realized that he was right. They were damp with spilled tears. So I do, she said, smiling. But it is happiness this time. You could not have chosen better. I would rather have this than any treasure in the mountain. Thorin smiled.
I ought to take offense to that, I think.
If you do, I will beg your pardon, Bella said, tightening her grip on the blade's handle before slipping it into her pocket. How shall I thank you?
That,
Thorin said, taking another step closer,
is a very dangerous question.
Is it? Bella said very softly, looking up at him through her lashes. And yet, I'm not afraid. Thorin's smile widened, and he leaned towards her, only to be interrupted by a sudden knock at the door. Bella gasped, darting out of Thorin's reach. Come in!
Don't come in,
ordered Thorin, but it was too late. The door swung open to reveal Dory, who looked around the room with suspicion. Am I interrupting something? Dory asked, glaring fiercely at Thorin.
Yes,
Thorin growled, trying to shut the door.
Go away.
Ignoring him, Dory held the door open with one hand and apparently no effort. I will not. This is highly improper. Does Feely know you're here? He knows, Bella said hastily. Thorin has given me a courting gift, you see. Ah, Dora relaxed, pushing the door open wider and stepping into the room.
Well, as I didn't meet Feely in the hallway, I'm sure it's been quite long enough. Besides, your things have arrived from the Shire, and I've brought them down.
Oh, said Bella, pushing past Thorin and Dory to look into the hallway. I didn't think they'd really send them, even with Gandalf passing along my letters.
Why wouldn't they?
Asked Dory, lifting one of the large trunks and carrying it into the sitting room. Not to be outdone, Thorin picked up the other, only wincing a little at its weight. Hesitantly, Bella undid the latches and threw open the first trunk.
What could it all be?
I told them they could keep the household goods. I have no need of dishes and the like, but it will be nice to have my clothes again, she said happily, as she pulled out one dress after another, running her hands over their familiar textures.
Look, she exclaimed, when she reached the bottom. My father's trinket box, and the portraits of my parents that hung over the fire. They didn't have to send these.
Confused and delighted, she hurried over to the other trunk, fumbling the latches in haste.
The linens my mother made for me, Bella said, pressing the blanket against her cheek. They shouldn't have. They'll be far too small for the beds here. And her tea set. My favorite books. Look at it all. Didn't they want them?
There's a letter, Dory said, pulling it out from where it was stuck against the interior of the lid. See if they say.
Bella took it from him, raising an eyebrow at the familiar handwriting.
It's from my Aunt Donna Mira, she said, not opening the flap of the envelope. No doubt she'll have a lot to say.
With a sigh, she opened the letter, holding it gingerly away from herself, as if her aunt might reach out from the page to scold her. But as she read, she drew the page closer and closer, until it was inches from her face.
She says, Bella began, she wishes me every happiness on my engagement.
She looked up at Dory and Thorin, who were watching her with identical expressions of wary confusion.
Gandalf must have told them, Bella said, looking back down at the letter. She goes on to say the Bag End will be kept in the family, not the Sackville Baggins branch, thank you very much, Aunt Dunamira.
And that... Bella swallowed and took a deep breath. And that if I ever wish to go home, it will be returned to me at once.
But isn't that a good thing? Dory said, passing her a neatly pressed handkerchief. Though I hope you haven't changed your mind about staying.
Of course I haven't, Bella said, wiping at her eyes. But I thought they'd be glad to be rid of me, that they didn't care for me, and...
Overcome, she covered her face with her hands, and Dory hurried to wrap his arms around her shoulders.
There, there, he soothed, patting at her hair. Of course they care for you. Family always does, whether they approve of you or no. You may take my word on that.
She said to remember my family would always love me, and that there would always be a place for me in the Shire.
Bella sobbed into his shoulder. Why didn't they ever tell me that before?
Because then you would not have laughed,
Thorin said quietly, still standing by the abandoned trunk.
And you are meant to come to Erebor. To us.
Thorin is right, Dory murmured, leading her gently over to a chair. This is your home now, and we're glad to have you. And won't you feel better with some of your own things around the place?
I suppose so, Bella said softly.
Well, there you are, said Dory. Now, Thorin will need to go and oversee the arrivals from Ered Luin, I think.
He looked at Thorin for confirmation, and the king nodded.
So why don't I send for Ori and Nori, and we'll sit with you for a while and help you unpack?
Oh, don't go to any trouble, Bella protested, smoothing her hair and straightening her dress.
No trouble at all, dear, Dory said, tutting at the state of her braids. And anyway, I feel a sudden urge to see my foolish brothers.
Bella nodded, folding her aunt's letter and putting it carefully into her pocket.
So do I.
Tell us again how it's going to go,
Dwan said, as he dragged two more chairs into the large sitting room he shared with Balin.
You and the others will sit there, Bella said, pointing at the hodgepodge collection of chairs and couches that was piling up near the fireplace.
And Thorin will sit there.
She nodded towards a lone chair, set across from the rest.
You can ask him whatever you like, to make sure he's a good fit for... Well, you know,
For the family.
She blushed.
Whatever I like, grinned Keeley, as he and Feely carried in another barrel of ale. That could be dangerous.
Dory tutted at him from his place by the fire, where he and Balin were sharing a pot of tea.
Now, we're here for Bella, not to amuse ourselves.
Bella waved away his protests with a hand. It's just a formality by this point, isn't it? Even in the Shire, these meetings are mostly the chance to have a bit of fun, making a suitor nervous.
Threaten him, you mean?
Grinned Beaufort, sliding a platter of rolls away from his brother.
Not yet. You have to wait until everyone gets here,
he said, smacking at Bomber's hand. Bella grimaced. Maybe this was a bad idea. We ought to call it off.
Not on your life,
said Glowin, dropping onto one of the couches and making himself comfortable.
We've been waiting for this for months.
Yes, I've had my questions ready for ages, said Ori proudly, pulling a scroll out of his pocket. It unfurled all the way down to the stone floor.
You can't ask all of that,
Keeley protested, picking up the end of the scroll and tugging on it.
Everyone's got to have a turn. Where's your list, then?
Ori cried, tugging it back, wincing as the paper started to tear.
Let go! This took 6 revisions!
Keeley dropped it, throwing his hands in the air and looking around the room for support.
I haven't got a list. Does everybody have a list?
Half the dwarves nodded, and the other half started to laugh. Silence fell as the two sides looked at each other, and was just as quickly obliterated as an argument broke out.
No one said there had to be a list.
Of course I wrote out my questions. How else would I remember to ask them about the incident at the training forge? Can we ask about that? Hang on, I want to make an addendum. Has anyone got a pen?
But when do we get to threaten him?
Bella, resigned to the idea that the evening was no longer in her control, slipped into the next room, where she planned to watch everything through a crack in the doorway. She felt no embarrassment. Spying and eavesdropping were as much a part of these traditions as questions and threats, and something in her thrilled a bit at experiencing these events for herself, at long last. She looked around, narrowing her eyes at the dim light, before settling them on a low stool, which she dragged behind the door and out of sight. By virtue of having the largest quarters, Balin and Dwan had won the right to host, much to the chagrin of the others, and judging from the weapons and armor neatly lining the walls, Bella would be waiting out the evening in Dwalin's bedroom. A loud knock at the outer door silenced the argument in the sitting room, and Bella held her breath as Balin went to open it and admit her intended. The others remained silent as Thorin entered, watching him with judging eyes as he took his place in the chair before them, looking unbothered.
Everyone,
he greeted them, reaching out to snag a mug.
I hope this evening finds you well.
We'll be the ones asking the questions, Ori said, half rising out of his chair.
Dory sighed, and Keeley slapped a hand over his mouth to keep from laughing, but Thorin only nodded.
Of course,
he said, looking past the lot of them to gaze into the fire.
Whenever you're ready.
The room exploded with noise, as each of Bella's 12 brothers tried to speak over the others, half of them holding up various papers as they shouted, and some of them slamming fists or feet into the furniture to make their points. Thorin only smiled as he nursed his drink.
Enough!
Shouted Dwalin, getting to his feet and pointing a finger at Thorin.
What are your intentions towards my sister?
The room quieted only a fraction as the other dwarves spoke up in support of the question.
Yes, what are your intentions?
Don't think I've forgotten Lake Town.
How long have you been planning this? This seduction!
What did happen that night in Mirkwood?
Be quiet!
Cried Glowin, glaring at everyone.
We'll get no answers this way. Now, he said, looking at Thorin, Dwalin asked you a question about your intentions.
Thorin scowled, apparently having hoped the debate would carry on a bit longer.
I intend to marry her and throw the rest of you meddlers out of the mountain.
You'd think, said Nori, shooting a wink towards Bella, that someone who was hoping to win our approval would be a bit friendlier, wouldn't you, Beaufort?
Beaufort nodded, elbowing Glowin in the ribs.
Oh, aye, more than a bit, I'd say. But perhaps he's forgotten that we could put an end to his whole bleeding courtship, if we ever mind to.
He forgets nothing, snorted Owen as he refilled his mug. Just thinks we wouldn't dare to do it. Ha! He'll be surprised, won't he?
The others chorused their agreement, and Thorin, who perhaps sensed that the evening wasn't going as he'd expected, raised a brow at Feely, who only smirked.
After all, Feely said, as if he were savoring every word. Who's to say he'll treat our sister properly? Am I the only one who remembers the incident at the wall? 12 angry gazes turned toward Thorin, who fidgeted uncomfortably.
Bella has accepted my apology for that.
Bella is entirely too forgiving, said Keeley, in a dark enough tone that the others looked at him in surprise. In the other room, Bella was silently panicking. This wasn't how such evenings were supposed to go at all. There ought to be more laughter, and questions that would perhaps embarrass Thorin a bit, but nothing so upsetting. And really, wasn't it just like the dwarves to turn such a simple thing into an incident?
The lass may have forgiven you, said Glowin,
but she's ours to look after now. I won't say that she doesn't know her mind, but Keeley is right. She may forgive too easily.
And really, that was too much, Bella thought to herself, but before she could storm into the room, Dwalin interrupted.
The hobbit is blooded in battle, he said,
looking from dwarf to dwarf,
and her choice is not ours to question. But,
he said, pointing at Thorin,
she has been hurt on our watch and on our account, more than once. Things are different now. We will not allow such a thing to happen again. Best you remember that.
I will,
said Thorin seriously, as the room murmured its assent. There was quiet for a time, while the company figured out how to proceed.
Ah,
said Balin, leaning back in his chair and smiling contentedly at the hushed room.
Did you ever think we'd see it again, lads? Erebor, as she should be.
I know what you mean, old friend,
said Owen, taking a swig of his ale.
Still a ways to go. She's getting there.
It isn't what I pictured, Feely admitted, looking into the fire. It's grander than I imagined, and darker. Sometimes I'll be all alone in an empty hall, and it's like I can hear the voices of all the dwarves that were here before.
I've heard it too,
said Beaufort, knocking shoulders with Beaufort, who nodded his agreement.
All three of us have.
It's better now that the dwarves Maird Luin have come, but there's a shadow over this place that didn't leave with the dragon.
Give it time, advised Dory,
as he refilled Ori's teacup. The markets have already begun to reopen, and there'll be dale again in a year or so. And in the meantime, a wedding will be just the thing to spread some cheer through these halls. That brightened the mood considerably, and the rest of the evening passed in a merry blur. And as the drinking went on, the suggestions for the festivities grew more and more ridiculous. You ought to line the main hall from the front gates to the throne room with silver bells. You know, as a symbol.
Don't be foolish. There isn't any winds the side of the mountain. How will they ring? Oh, surely someone will jostle them. That can be Keeley's job.
What about a solid gold oliphant? If we put wheels on it, you could ride it. Should we invite the elves? That was met with a resounding no, and several bits of food were tossed at Ori, who had suggested it. Even Dory looked appalled. The party broke up shortly afterwards, with each of the dwarves trying to excuse themselves before they were obliged to stay and help Balin and Dwalin tidy up. Bella was relatively certain the others had forgotten her presence by then, and so she slipped her ring on and followed Thorin, who had been the first to leave. She crept up behind him as he moved through the quiet corridor, not saying anything until he reached the door to his rooms, where she laid an invisible hand on his arm. I think it went well, don't you? She said.
A rousing success,
he agreed, grave and seemingly unsurprised.
Are you planning to stay invisible?
I might be, she said warmly, and, feeling bold, she leaned in to press a kiss against his cheek.
What was that for?
He smiled, somehow locking his gaze exactly on the spot where she'd retreated. Usually we'd get a bit of time alone after one of these evenings, Bella explained, glad he could not see her blush. I forgot to mention it.
You are forgiven, though if you wish to make amends, you may start by removing your ring.
I have made amends enough, she laughed, and anyway, I have to get back before they miss me.
If you must.
Thorin grumbled, but she saw the amusement in his eyes and knew it was only for show.
But know this, I won't wait long for my revenge.
Oh? She said. And how is that?
Because,
Thorin said, smiling as if he'd won a victory,
Tomorrow you meet with Dis.
Ah, Miss Baggins, Dis said, looking up from her tea. Please do come and sit. Bella did so, perching uncomfortably on the edge of a wooden chair that was ever so slightly too big for her, and looking around the room as if she expected someone else to appear from the shadows.
I've been looking forward to this evening, Dis said,
leaning forward to fill Bella's cup. We have not spent much time together, you and I, and there are so many questions I've been waiting to ask you. Bella straightened. A lifetime of awkward teas and disapproving chats with her aunts had prepared her for this. Of course, she said smoothly, taking a sip of her drink. You must feel free to ask me whatever you wish. We are to be sisters, after all.
So my brother tells me, Dis said. You can imagine my surprise when I heard the news. It was nearly as shocking as when I learned my sons had acquired a sister.
She paused, eyeing Bella appraisingly. What is it about hobbits, I wonder, that so captivates the men of Durin's line? The curls, I think, Bella said blandly. If there's one thing I've learned about dwarves, it's that unruly hair will drive them to madness. Dis laughed, and some of the tension bled out of Bella. I worried you would not approve, she admitted, hands tightening around her cup.
Why is that? Dis said, taking a sip of her tea.
Well, just look at him, Bella said. He ought to have someone very grand, and I... Well, I'm only a hobbit. Dis considered Bella over the rim of her cup, before delicately setting it in its saucer. You think my brother very proper, don't you, Miss Baggins? She asked.
Of course,
Bella said, surprised. And you consider him dutiful, stoic, Dis prompted, much like my Feely. Yes, I suppose so, Bella replied. Dis nodded. Everyone does, but it was not always so. When I look at Keeley, I see my brother just as he was in our youth, generous with his smiles, quick to laugh. It is life that has made him hard, Miss Baggins, and I begrudge this world all his every frown and sorrow. Oh, said Bella, bringing a hand to cover her mouth. I did not... So you see, Dis continued, waving away Bella's sympathies. I cannot object to anything that lightens the burdens he has claimed for himself. You know what it is, I think, to love one's brother. I do, Bella said firmly, on surer ground now. I would do anything for mine. Dis smiled slightly, just enough that Bella could see the echo of Keeley's teasing grin in her face. Just so, she agreed. Even take tea with a hobbit. Bella raised an eyebrow. Or live among so many confounded dwarves. Dis laughed, throwing her head back and bracing her hands on her knees. Oh, we will get along fine, Miss Baggins, she said, when she got her breath back. They took their tea in silence for a time, but Bella had a feeling that Dis was merely waiting for the right moment to continue her questioning. And eventually, it came. There is something I would like to know, she said, and at Bella's nod, she continued. I hope my question will not cause offense, but I must ask, regardless. You seem agreeable enough, Miss Baggins, and I know you must be a good sort, for my sons to love you as they do. Keeley you might fool, if you are of a mind to, but never Feely. His judgment in such matters far outstrips mine. That is not a question, Bella said, amicably. Why my brother? Dis said, leaning forward in her chair. From what I have heard, you hobbits are gentle, merry creatures who value your comforts. But there is nothing comfortable about Thorin. Do not mistake me. I love my brother and count you lucky that he has chosen you. But why would you choose him? Bella paused. This was not the question she had been expecting, and she felt she ought to give it as well-considered a response as she could, on the spot. When I was a girl, she said, looking at Dis, to see if a lengthy explanation would be allowed. At her nod, Bella went on. When I was a girl, I did not get on well with the other children. I preferred my books to their company, and when our parents forced us to play together, their treatment seemed like cruelty, though I see now that we simply didn't understand each other. Hindsight often illuminates such things. Dis nodded. Bella smiled slightly. Indeed. So when my mother would bring up my eventual marriage, as a mother does, it made me nervous. Marry one of those cruel creatures who pulled my hair and stole my things? I would have soon have run away. And so I thought, whoever I must marry, let him be kind. That is all I ask. That is not my brother, Dis said flatly. He is many things, but no one would call him kind. No, Bella shook her head. No, you're right. I have known kind men, and in fact I nearly married one, and it is not a word I would use to describe Thorin. You were nearly married before, Dis said, sitting up in her chair as if this were the first thing Bella had said that had surprised her. How can that be? He was older, not one of my playmates whose teasing had bothered me so, Bella said, embarrassed that the bad decisions she had made in her youth and her loneliness should still be cause for gossip, after so much time and so much distance. And he was very gentle with me, always asking about my books and my garden. I was not afraid of him, and young enough that I confused that for love. Dis leaned forward. But you did not marry him. No. Bella shook her head. He ended it, but so kindly that it seemed almost churlish to resent it. And so I gave it up, and would have no more suitors. Because what use was courting when you could not even count on kindness to make you happy? Sad, Dis said, but I see the sense in it. And then I met your brother, Bella smiled, and thought he must be the rudest person I had ever met. The first thing he said to me was an insult, and on my own front mat. Dis closed her eyes in embarrassment. Yes, that sounds like him, though I doubt he meant it as such. I agree. He's just plain-spoken. Bella nodded. I learned that about him quickly. He says what he thinks, always, without regard for feelings or politics, and he made it no secret that he thought I should not be on his quest. And even now, I can't say that he was wrong. And yet, here you are, said Dis. It was a close thing, smiled Bella. I was not prepared for such a journey, and nearly perished several times before I made it past the Misty Mountains. But there is one incident in particular that I think will answer your question, and I hope you will forgive me for being so long about it. I will let you know, Dis said, when I have heard your answer. Bella nodded. I fell from a ledge on the path through the mountains. The others reached for me as I clung to the cliffside, but it was Thorin who saved my life, swinging down to boost me into their grip. But in doing so, he lost his grip, and if it had not been for Dwalin, he would have fallen to his death. Dis stared. Apparently no one had told her about that part of the journey, and Bella hurried to continue. He nearly died, but he never hesitated, though I had not been useful to him in his quest so far. He blistered my ears afterwards, too, Bella said, smiling at the memory. I was very angry, and it was some time before I realized that out of all the things he ever said to offend me, and no matter how useless he thought I was, he never seemed to regret saving my life, though it nearly cost him his own. Because your brother is not a kind man, but he is a good one, and that is what matters to me. Silence fell over the room, broken only by the clink of Bella's cup against the table. She looked at her hands, a bit embarrassed at her words. After a moment, Dis spoke. Thorin has informed me that after these meetings, it is expected that I will slip away, so the two of you may spend some time alone. Is that correct? It's considered a favor, Bella said, heat rising to color her face, and only done if the family approves of the match. There is no obligation. Of course, Dis said, smiling slightly. He would not have mentioned that, knowing how I loved to irritate him. She stood, setting her cup down carefully, and taking a moment to straighten the tablecloth. I must beg your pardon, and ask that you excuse me for a few minutes while I see to other things. Dis paused at the doorway. My brother would tell you that he has no need of my approval, and it would be no lie. Still, it may please him to know that I offer it freely. Do let him know, if you should see him before I do, she said, breaking into a grin as she shut the door behind her. Bella stood there for a moment, happy and confused all at once, until another door opened, when she hadn't noticed in the shadows beside the fireplace. Thorin stepped into the room, and Bella turned to face him, not trying to stifle her smile, though she knew she must look overeager. "You heard that, I assume," she said as he walked over to her. "I think it went well, don't you? How much did you hear?" she asked, blushing and taking a step back so that she bumped into her chair. He kept moving forward, crowding her against the chair and looking down into her face, intense and serious. "Thorin?" she asked, hesitantly.
"Stop," he gasped. "Do not test my control. One more word, one, and that will be the end of it. I will throw you over my shoulder and haul you down to the deepest heart of the mountain, behind stone walls and iron doors and away from anyone who would dare to so much as look upon you. And I will unbind the braids others put in your hair and strip you of anything forged by hands besides mine. And in that place, Kivasha, treasure of all my treasures, you will belong to me, and only me, if even one word more passes your lips."
"Oh." Bella's mouth moved silently as he leaned down to touch their foreheads together.
"I'm sorry,"
he whispered after a moment.
"I'm sorry. I have control of it now. I swear to you, you are in no danger."
Bella reached over to take his hand, lacing their fingers together. "I was not afraid."
"Your hobbit ways are a trial,"
Thorin said, leaning in close to her ear.
"I have the heart of a dwarf, and it has given itself to you. It is hard to bear the waiting."
"Yes," Bella said. "I have been very patient already. We have walked a long road together, you and I, and I would not change a step of it. Not if you were my journey's end."
"Belle!" Feely said, jostling her out of a sound sleep. "Belle, wake up!" Scowling, she swatted at him without opening her eyes. He laughed, putting a hand on her shoulder and shaking her a bit. "I've been waking Keely every day for over 70 years, he said. "You'll have to swing a bit harder than that."
"Don't think I won't," she growled, throwing back the covers and sitting up. "It's too early to be up, Feely."
"Is it?" he asked, still grinning. "Go back to sleep, then. Oh, and we've been summoned to a meeting with Thorin after lunch to discuss your future marriage, which he's just announced at breakfast. I thought you might like to know."
"What?"
she gasped, stumbling out of bed and tripping over the blankets in her haste. "He what?" "Announced your engagement," Feely repeated, putting an arm out to steady her. "At breakfast. Weren't you listening?"
"Dwarves!" Bella shrieked, throwing her arms into the air. "Insufferable!"
"I know," Feely commiserated, patting her shoulder. "We're all sorry you missed it. I brought you back a scone."
"Wait,"
Bella said, turning to look at him with wide eyes. "Thorin has requested the meeting. Today?"
"Today,"
Feely agreed. "I take it your discussion with Ma went well."
"I think so," Bella said, digging through her chest of clothes for something appropriate. "She did say she approved. You might have warned me she was terrifying."
"It seemed cruel," Feely said, leaning against the bedpost and laughing at her irritation. "When you must face her regardless, better you go into it with hope."
"You're a terror. I can see where you get it from now," she said wryly, pulling out a green overdress.
"Not that one," Feely said, bending over to shift her things around. He pulled out a blue dress, one Bella had not yet worn. "Wear this. It'll throw him off his game."
"We have more important things to worry about than my outfit, Feely."
Bella rolled her eyes. "We have had hardly any time to prepare."
"This is important," Feely insisted. "He's made the first move by not giving us enough warning. We'll need every advantage if we're going to win."
"The point is not to win." Bella sighed, but she laid the dress out on the bed, checking it for creases. "The point is to reach a compromise that ensures the marriage will begin smoothly."
Feely snorted.
Smooth or not, I think you'd be happier with a dwarven compromise.
Oh? What's that? Bella asked, looking up.
Where you get what you want, and the other side compromises. Oh, confound it! Feely whispered as they entered the meeting hall. He's brought Balin to speak for him. He's taking this very seriously.
It could be worse, Bella whispered back, trying not to smile. He could have brought your mother.
Feely froze, and Bella laughed aloud at his look of horror.
I tried,
called Thorne from across the table.
But she would not come. I believe she is quite taken with you.
He smiled at Bella as she dragged a still-shocked Feely to their seats.
Or perhaps she thought it would be amusing to see me outmaneuvered by her son.
Good afternoon, lass, said Balin, looking up from his papers. I hope the suddenness of our meeting wasn't an inconvenience. Of course not, Feely said smoothly, regaining his composure and pulling out some notes of his own. We've been prepared for some time now. This was a lie. The only preparation they'd had time for was a frantic discussion over breakfast, but Bella thought he carried it off rather well.
Excellent, Balin smiled. Now, just to make certain I understand the rules here, I will speak for Thorin, and you will speak for Bella.
Yes, Feely said. They will not speak, except to us.
May I ask why?
Balin asked, looking at Bella. We have not yet begun. She shrugged. Tradition, mostly, but also to direct our bad feelings towards someone besides our intended, should this turn contentious.
Ah, very sensible, Balin said. Very clever. I'm sure it will not come to that. Let's see now, he said, shuffling some pages. Shall we start with the living arrangements?
As good a place as any, Feely nodded. I presume he'd like her to move into his quarters.
Well, he can hardly move into her room, can he?
Balin said easily. They're spacious chambers.
We're prepared to concede that, Feely replied without looking up, on the condition that Bella may make any changes she wishes to the furnishings or the decor.
Balin frowned.
Those rooms have been as they are for 500 years.
Feely raised a brow. It may have escaped you, but my sister is a hobbit. That she is willing to live inside a mountain at all is a concession. Surely you're not going to make a fuss over a few doilies to make her more comfortable.
Balin opened his mouth, probably to protest further, but Thorin leaned over to whisper in his ear. They exchanged a few words, and Balin looked back across the table, his face serene once more.
Of course, our sister's comfort is our highest priority, he said,
and Bella had to kick Feely under the table when he rolled his eyes.
We are prepared to concede her right to make any changes she wishes, with the exception of the carvings around the fireplace. They're nearly 1,000 years old, he explained, looking at Bella.
Of course, Bella said. I doubt I'll want to change anything anyway.
Bella!
Feely whispered, stopping her words with a hand on her arm. Shouldn't I be doing the talking?
Yes, she murmured, low enough that she hoped only he could hear. But it feels wrong to demand such things.
I think that's why I'm doing the talking, he said, looking at her seriously. I can do this, Belle. I've been trained in negotiation.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry, she said, patting his hand. Please, keep going. You're doing splendidly.
He grinned, then looked back across at Balin and Thorin, who were watching them expectantly. The fireplace will not be changed. Moving on, there is a room connected with Thorin's that would be ideal as a study or sitting room. As no one else is currently occupying it, Bella would like to lay claim to it, for her personal use.
Balin nodded, flipping through his papers as if he had expected the question.
Unfortunately, he said, looking smug, I believe that room has an occupant.
If he had intended to unsettle Feely by challenging his ruse, he was not successful. It will be cleared out by the day of the wedding, he said calmly, if you have no other objections.
Balin looked pleased.
None, as long as she does not intend it as a bedroom.
Feely flushed. The room must be hers to use as she sees fit. If my uncle cannot keep his wife in his bed, surely that is his problem.
Thorin scowled, and Bella covered her face with her hands, but Balin looked unperturbed.
Any way she sees fit, he nodded. Except a bedroom.
Irritated, Feely leaned over to Bella. I don't think he'll budge on this, he said. If you decide to move out, we'll find you a new room. I don't think we should plan on my moving out, Feely, Bella hissed. I have no intention of ever doing such a thing. You never know, he said, and it wouldn't hurt to have it to hold over him. He sighed at her dark expression. Very well, a study or a sitting room only. Thank you, Balin said, making note of it. Shall we move on to the wedding? Feely nodded. Bella would like to have the wedding at midsummer. It's considered auspicious among her people.
That's only 2 months away,
Balin protested. Hardly enough time to plan a wedding, not to speak of a marriage gift.
Have you not started?
Feely asked madly. Bella is nearly finished.
Bella, who had not been expecting the lie, fought to keep her face blank. In truth, she had only just started Thorin's gift, though she knew she could finish by midsummer, if she worked at it.
I suppose we could get everything done in time, if we delegate,
Balin grumbled. Feely pushed a sheet of paper across the table.
Our thoughts exactly. Here are our suggestions.
Balin took the page, placing it between himself and Thorin as he read aloud.
Dwalin in charge of security. Yes, we agree to that. Myself as efficient. That is very kind. We agree to that also. Bomber for the food. Hold on a moment.
He looked up.
Bomber is a fine cook for a traveling company. But can he prepare a feast for 200 nobles? Would he want to?
Feely lifted his chin.
Bomber is a fine cook, as well as being Bella's brother. No doubt he will acquit himself admirably.
Balin made a face.
But surely for a wedding, something a bit more refined.
If Bomber does not feel up to the task, you may assign it to whomever you wish, Feely offered. But he'll hardly be cooking it all by himself.
Balin looked at Thorin, who raised a brow at him. Very well, he grumbled. Bomber it is.
And of course, Bella will pick her own dress,
Feely continued, as if he expected to be challenged, but Balin only nodded.
Whatever she likes, he said, though she may want to make sure it goes with the royal jewelry.
Bella elbowed Feely, eyes wide, and shook her head. He leaned down to try and talk to her, but she just shook her head again, crossing her arms in front of her. He sighed.
Bella isn't fond of jewelry, he explained to Balin, and for someone her size, the royal jewels may be a bit much.
Balin looked at Thorin. We had not considered her stature, he admitted. If you could give us a moment.
Feely nodded, and Balin and Thorin leaned down, whispering furiously.
You're going to have to give them something, Feely whispered to Bella. You can't be married with no jewels.
I've seen the stuff you lot pulled out of the treasure pile, she hissed back. I won't be able to walk.
We have a suggestion, Balin said, causing both of them to look up. Thorin's sister had a set of jewelry made up for her as a girl. It's a delicate set, and an heirloom. It would be very appropriate.
Feely looked at Bella.
That's as good an offer as we're likely to get, he said in a low voice. My advice is to take it.
Bella slumped down in her chair. Fine, she sighed. As long as Dis doesn't mind. She tried to smile. After all, it's not like it's a great heavy crown, or something equally ridiculous.
Feely blanched. We accept your offer, pending my mother's approval, he said. Except for the crown.
Did you have something else in mind?
Balin asked, taken aback. Feely closed his eyes.
No crown at all, he said, as if he was forcing the words out.
Don't be ridiculous,
Thorin said, but Balin shushed him.
Now, Feely, he said, think. She cannot marry your uncle bareheaded.
We can make up the difference with hairpins, Feely offered.
Or beads. Balin shook his head. That simply won't do. For a miner's daughter, maybe, but not for the bride of a king. What will people say if your sister stands up to be married in nothing more than a few beads?
Perhaps they will think well of me, that I would not let their idle gossip affect my sister, Feely growled, and Bella laid a hand on his arm.
Would it be that much of a scandal, Feely? she asked. He opened his mouth to protest, then closed it again, considering his words. If you were a dwarf, it would be, he said at last. But your ways are not ours. We will explain, if anyone asks. Bella frowned. Will people think badly of you? That doesn't matter, Feely said, squeezing her hand. People are always complaining about something. You can't let it worry you. After a moment of thought, Bella closed her eyes. No, it isn't worth all of that. I will wear the crown, she sighed. Her eyes flew open. But a small one, if you please. Feely smiled at her. You trust me? He asked. She blinked. Of course. He turned back to Bon and Thorin. Bella will wear a crown, but it will be the one I provide for her. Balin hesitated.
You are a fine jeweler for your age, Feely, he said, but hardly a master, and there are only 2 months.
You may trust me not to embarrass my sister, Feely said sharply. I know the limits of my capabilities.
Very well, Balin said. I will speak to Dis this evening. You may come along and have a look at the set if you like, so you can match it. Is there anything else?
There is one more thing, Feely said, looking down at his papers. But before I mention it, I want it clear that I do not approve of this request, and only bring it up because Bella demands it. Balin and Thorin looked at each other, curious.
Go on,
Balin said. Feely swallowed, then squared his shoulders before continuing. In the event that a son should come from this union, it is Bella's request that he be removed from the line of succession.
What?
Balin gasped.
That's outrageous. It is out of the question. I accept,
said Thorin, looking calmly at Feely from across the room. Feely's jaw dropped. You cannot be serious, he protested. I brought it up for the form of the thing, but...
I have an heir, said Thorin. He has paid for his place with sweat and blood, and will rule with wisdom. When I meet my fathers in the halls of waiting, I'll be proud to leave our people in his hands.
Feely's grip tightened around the pen, until Bella feared it might snap in two. Thank you, she said, breaking the silence. I would ask nothing more.
Nor I, said Thorin, rising from his chair. I look forward to midsummer.
To midsummer, Bella smiled, and the end of a long road. The weeks until the wedding passed swiftly, and it seemed as if everyone in the mountain threw themselves into the preparations with good cheer and a light heart. Bella spent many afternoons with Bomber, planning the menu, and more long evenings with Dis, who had offered to help her with her dress. Balin and Ori barricaded themselves into the library to plan the ceremony, and the rest helped wherever they could find an opportunity to be useful. Even Nori was caught hanging silver bells above the marketplace, though he would not admit where he got them. With all that needed to be done, Bella found it very difficult to steal a moment or two to work on Thorin's gift. There was hardly time for anything elaborate, but in the end she felt she'd done as well as she could, and when she presented it to him on the night before the wedding, it was with only a bit of nervousness. It was only her and Thorin in the little sitting room she shared with Feely and Keely, who had been left with Dwalin to ensure they didn't try to eavesdrop. So they were quite alone when she brought out her project and unrolled it over the little table where Thorin waited. It's your family, Bella said hurriedly. And the mountain, do you see? It was the mountain, or at least, as close as Bella could come to depicting it with ink-black threads against white linen, and within it were the names of all the folk of Thorin's line, with veins of gold around them, studded here and there with gems. In the center, above the name of Thorin's grandfather, was a tiny opal, shaped to resemble the Arkenstone he had so loved. And if a chip of emerald drew attention to Feely's name, or sapphire embellished Keely's, well, no one could begrudge Bella her favorites.
I see,
Thorin said, a broad smile breaking over his face. His eyes followed the silver line from Durin at the peak, all the way down to Feely and Keely at the mountain's heart.
You included Dis,
Thorin smirked, pointing at his sister's name.
She'll be pleased.
I included all the women of your line, as far back as Balin could remember. Bella said, looking worried. Should I not have done?
Dwarves guard our secrets as we do our treasure, and our women are considered both. We do not like to share even their names.
Thorin said, his hand lingering near the name of his mother, next to Thrain's.
But I do not object.
He rolled the tapestry up carefully, taking care to create no creases, and tied it with the bit of ribbon.
I will hang it above the throne,
he promised, placing it gently on the table.
It will be an heirloom of my line.
You needn't do that just to please me, said Bella, blushing.
I would do much to please you, but this pleases me,
Thorn said, cutting off her protests by reaching into his pocket for a small book with a tooled leather cover, which he handed to Bella.
Here, your gift.
The Tale of Denar the Carver and His Wife, Nav, Bella read. A book? She asked warmly, flipping through the creamy pages and admiring the neat black lettering.
One of our stories. A copy, I'm afraid. I'm no scribe,
Thorn explained.
But my father was strict in his lessons, and I have a fair enough hand. The cover was trickier. I have not worked with leather since before Feely was born.
You wrote me a book, Bella said dreamily. Can I go read it now? He smiled.
There will be time for that later.
There won't, Bella protested. Tomorrow is the wedding. That will take all day. If I don't read it now, it'll be days before I get the chance.
What if I told it to you?
Thorin offered, reaching out to close the cover.
Would you stay?
I suppose that depends on how well you tell it, Bella teased, but she lowered the book to her lap. He frowned, and a faraway look passed over his face, as if he were trying to remember the words.
Denar was a stone carver from the Grey Mountains,
he began.
His skills were those of legend, and our folk sing of them still, though his works were lost to dragonfire long ago. The women of the kingdom vied for his attention, and more than one had sworn never to wed, if they could not have him. He took no notice of them, occupied as he was with his craft, but in time, the joy he took in his work faded, and he began to look for a wife. So he met with all of them, from the richest noblewoman to the poorest scullery maid, and though he found some of them beautiful, and some of them kind, and some of them clever, and one or two all of those, none of them moved his heart. In despair, he sent for a block of marble, one of the last to be mined from Khazad Dûm, before its fall, and in his grief he went at it with file and chisel. Day after day he carved, stopping only to send for finer and finer tools, until there were no more to be had, and then he forged his own, and when his neighbors spoke of him, they called him Denar the Mad. And though his workshop was brightly lit with mirror lamps, he moved his carving to the mountain summit, ranting about the light. The statue was finished in moonlight, and with the last stroke of the sandcloth, Denar collapsed at its feet. It is not known whether it was Denar's skill, or a gift of the stone itself, but some magic brought life to the stone woman, who was called Nav, and she lifted her maker into her arms and carried him down the mountain. Under Nav's care, Denar healed, and they wed on the mountaintop where she awoke, and were together all of their days.
Thorin paused, looking up at Bella, who was watching him, captivated.
This is a popular story among lovers who believe, like Denar, that their chosen was made for them alone, and the only one suited for them in all of Middle-earth. But that is not why I chose it for you.
Then why? Asked Bella, hugging the small volume tight against her breast. Thorin reached out to cup her face, brushing a thumb over her cheek as their eyes met.
My heart was stone,
he said simply.
You gave it life.
Bella stared at him. I do not understand, she said, after a long stretch of silence, how you can be the same dwarf who called me a nursemaid on my welcome mat. He grinned, happy and careless, and in that moment Bella understood what Dis meant when she compared her somber brother to her merry son, and she made herself a silent promise to draw as many such smiles as she could, in whatever time would be given to them. "I'm getting married today," Bella said to herself as she stood before the mirror, trying to hold back her panic. "I'm getting married today, and my hair looks like a bird's nest." "True," said Dis, as she entered the room without knocking, "but at least the dress is beautiful." Privately, Bella thought the dress far too elaborate for hobbit standards, with its long gauzy sleeves and silver trim against white and green velvet, but she and Dis had fought enough battles over it that there was no need for her to say so. And in any case, Dis was right. It was undeniably lovely. "Yes, you did a wonderful job," Bella agreed, fiddling with the laces on the bodice. "And you look splendid." "I know," Dis smiled, giving her full skirt a bit of a twirl. She elected to forego Bella's austere hobbitish compunctions, as she called them, and her night-blue dress sparkled with studded sapphires. "Has Feely not been by with the jewelry yet? It's getting late." "Not yet," Bella said, uneasy. "I hope he comes in time to help me with my hair." "I'll do that," Dis said, gesturing towards a chair. "Sit." Bella thought of refusing. She would have much preferred Feely to help her, and she did not care to be ordered about on the morning of her own wedding, but it seemed silly to protest when the offer was made out of kindness, so she sat. Dis stood behind her, separating her hair into the tiny sections that would create a net of intricate braids. "I saw your gift to Thorin," she said as she worked. "Already it hangs behind the throne." "So soon?" Bella asked, trying to keep her head still. "I believe he went straight there from your meeting," Dis said, reaching into a cunningly hidden pocket for a jeweled bead. "He was very proud." "And you?" Bella asked, braced for the worst. "What do you think?" Dis's hand slowed, carding gently through Bella's hair for a moment. "I think," she said, in a softer voice, "that out of all the histories of my family on the walls of this mountain, yours is the only one that bears my name." Bella didn't know how to answer that, so Dis finished her hair in silence, stopping only to add a bead or a jewel to catch the light. "There," she said when she was finished. "Very nice." Bella moved to the mirror, craning her head around as far as she could in order to better admire the effect. Dis had tamed her hair into so many tiny braids that it hung like a shining curtain over her shoulders. "Very dwarfish," she said wryly, but she was not displeased. "It suits you," Dis said, "and I was glad to do it, but I came here with another purpose." Bella looked at her expectantly, and she continued. "Bella," she said, in a soft voice, "I don't know what force brought you to our mountain. Perhaps it was fate, as my brother says, or perhaps it was only chance. I care nothing for such matters. But you have made a place for yourself amongst us, and today you marry our king." She paused, staring at Bella's face as if she were searching for some sign of understanding. "You will marry our king," she repeated, after a moment, "and he loves you. That gives you a power over his heart, and however you wield it, you hold the fate of the dwarves in your hands. I came to caution you, or perhaps to beg. Please use it wisely." "I do not want such power," Bella said, unnerved. "Hobbits do not concern ourselves with such things." "No concern for power," Dis echoed, "and no love for gold. What, then, do hobbits care for?" "Food," Bella smiled, "and music. Good cheer. We are a simple folk." "I'm not so certain of that," Dis said, almost to herself. "Still, would that more of us valued such things. It would be a merrier world. Perhaps you will make it so." Unsettled, Bella could only nod. "Feely will be by soon with the jewelry," said Dis, moving towards the door. "Thank you again for lending it." Bella replied, for want of anything more substantial. Keep it, Dis said, with a careless shrug and careful expression. It does not suit me now. A gift between sisters. Then I will treasure it, Bella said solemnly, as a gift from my sister. Dis inclined her head slightly in acknowledgement, but Bella detected a hint of a smile as she left the room. Feely arrived a few minutes later, with a stack of wrapped packages in his arms.
Good morning, he said cheerfully, closing the door behind him with his foot. I brought some of your things.
Good morning, Bella repeated, eyeing the packages warily. What am I supposed to do with all of this?
He laughed, setting them on the desk beside her. I suggest you let me worry about that, he said. I ought to have come sooner, but I was distracting Keeley. He's far too excited, and has been trying to improve the decorations.
Oh, goodness gracious, Bella said, squeezing her eyes shut. Were there any survivors?
Beaufort fought him valiantly, and was led on a merry chase through the tunnels for his efforts, Feely said, his eyes bright with amusement. But it was Beaufort that grabbed him, and made him hand over all the ribbons.
Ribbons? Bella echoed, confused and horrified. What was he doing with ribbons?
Feely paused for a moment, considering. Better I don't tell you, honestly, he said. I told him to stay with Thorin and make sure Uncle didn't offend anyone before the ceremony. With luck, that'll keep him out of trouble.
With luck, that'll keep the both of them out of trouble, Bella said, relaxing for the first time since she'd put on her dress. Why, Feely, you look handsome, she said, admiring his green velvet doublet and cape. Were you expecting mail and leathers? He teased, making her blush, because, actually, she had been expecting just that.
Well, you're half right. I'll put my jerkin on for the feast, just in case.
Should I wear my mail? She asked, only half joking.
You could, he replied, as he started to unwrap the parcels he'd brought in with him. Nye the Second wed Tul Swiftaxe on the battlefield after a goblin skirmish, with both of them still in their bloodied armor. That's one of Keeley's favorite stories.
I'll have to have him tell it to me, Bella said, standing on her toes to peer over his shoulder, trying to get a glimpse. I suppose that's the jewelry.
You needn't look so worried, Feely said, opening one of the wooden boxes on the desk, and gently lifting out a silver chain, set with white and green stones. It's a plain enough set. You'll hardly notice it.
He draped it around her neck, fastening the clasp behind her.
Nice, he said, admiringly. Gold is more traditional, but Durin's line is partial to silver, so it's quite suitable. I believe it was made by my mother's uncle.
Well, it suits the dress, Bella said, though she really could not complain. It was light enough, and she found she really didn't mind it, or the bracelets that made up the rest of the set. Why, Feely, she said, as she turned in a circle before the mirror, I look just like a proper dwarf, wouldn't you say?
Not quite, he said, holding up the last parcel. Your crown.
Do I even want to see? She sighed, looking forlornly at the bundle in his hands.
He grinned. I suppose that's up to you. You could always close your eyes while I put it on you.
That made her smile a bit. Better to know what I'm getting into, she said, taking the package. It was very light, too light for its size, and she looked at it with suspicion. Feely, she murmured, pulling back the wrapping. What have you done? The last of the fabric fell away, and Bella took a long look at the thing she had so dreaded. No metal, no jewels, only a circle of pale pink roses braided into a bridal crown.
How did you know?
Bella asked, overwhelmed with a surge of relief and affection. I never said. There seemed no point. There are no roses on the mountain. But Lake Town has its share of gardeners, and Bard is very fond of you. Feely said, taking it from her hands and positioning it gently over her braids. As to how I knew, I have seen your shire, and we have been family for nearly a year now. It was not a risky guess.
Won't Thorin be angry? You tricked him, she said, even as she wrapped her arms around his neck and pressed a kiss to his cheek.
I think you'll be inclined towards forgiveness, today of all days. If it makes you happy, Feely said.
Besides, I have held up our bargain. I promised to make you a crown, and so I have.
Do you like it?
Of course I like it, Bella laughed,
reaching up to touch the soft petals. You knew I would. Before he could answer, they were interrupted by a clamor from the hallway and the thud of running footsteps outside the room.
Hide me! Hide me, Feely!
Keely shouted as he barreled through the door, slamming it behind him.
Belle, you look pretty.
Weren't you supposed to be watching Uncle? Feely asked, taking his brother by the shoulders and brushing off his blue doublet, which Bella noticed was a copy of Feely's own. Someone had also wrestled him into a silver coronet, and two slim braids hung from his temples.
Watch my hair, Feely!
Keely complained, batting at his hands.
Ma threatened me with dismemberment if I must it, and Thorn threw me out after I hit his boots.
He winked at Bella.
I told him he should embrace your hobbit customs, today of all days.
He didn't agree. You're lucky he's been in a good mood, Feely said dryly. I'm surprised he didn't take your head. Come on now, it's time to go.
You call that a good mood? I would rather he were dour.
Keely grinned, bouncing a bit in his excitement.
You oughtn't marry him, Belle. He doesn't deserve it.
He said, even as he offered her his arm. I have done so many things I shouldn't, since the day you all came knocking at my hobbit hole. Bella smiled, linking her other arm with Feely's as they stepped through the door. I don't intend to stop now. The end. Thanks for listening.